Hello, you're listening live to the 9th episode of the Armand and Akil Show, bringing you interviews with local activists, politicians, and policy experts from Vancouver and the Lower Mainland. And sometimes just shows where we play clips and react to them, like today. I'm Armand Rana.
And I'm Akil Krishnan. It's Saturday, the 7th of October, 2023, at 5.05 p.m. We are broadcasting live from UBC's Vancouver campus on the ancestral, traditional, and unceded territories of the Hunkmiyum-speaking Musqueam people.
So, Akil, a ton of news over the past month that we're going to get into in a bit. Before that, I guess a potential major story for our show is the alleged assassination of Harjan Singh Najjar, a Canadian citizen, by so-called agents of the government of India.
Yeah. We are going to be covering that story in a standalone historical episode. We want to explain the contours of Indo-Canadian relations, and we want to put this issue into historical context. And we will have a guest on who can shed light on this issue and provide a lot of historical context for that. On a lighter note, this past week, I saw you at your first Vancouver Whitecaps game. What did you think?
Yeah, it was great. The Whitecaps won 3-0.
To be celebrated, yes, and we clinched a playoff spot in the process.
Yeah, and, you know, I always got confused. You know, Whitecaps, they don't wear Whitecaps. It's not a type of cool drink or something. But yeah, it was a lot of fun, and the quality of soccer was, you know, it wasn't Lionel Messi, but it was pretty entertaining to watch, and there was a lot of skill on display for someone who doesn't understand much about soccer.
Thank you for the subtle dig at the home team and well, the MLS in general. But you're spot on. That's where the quality is at the moment. What did you think about the amenities of the stadium? I understand you went on a small excursion looking for food.
Yeah, so somebody told me, you know, just a friend of mine called Akil told me that, you know, all you can get at a Whitecaps game is, I guess, fried chicken and fries and a pretzel. And I was a bit disappointed with that, so I went on a bit of field trip, and I saw you can get, you know, poke bowls, you can get Indian food, you can get Korean food. It's a culinary experience as well as a sports event. Though I did end up missing the first goal because of my
culinary
adventure.
Exploits. Yeah. You know, I appreciate you doing that, because now I'll remember to take my blinders off next time and explore the culinary landscape of BC Place.
Yeah. Well, I guess about, you know, speaking of, you know, exploring outside of our landscape, you know, we talk generally about, you know, BC politics, but, you know, Manitoba had a historic election culminating in the first First Nations premier being elected to a Canadian province.
Yeah, Premier Designate Wab Kanu is going to be the first First Nations Premier in province. The territories have had First Nations Premiers before, but this is the first one in the Canadian province. And I think most people have been focused on the historic nature of Premier Designate Kanu's election. But did you know that he may also be the first rapper elected premier of a province?
Yeah.
Let's take a... Do we have one of his tracks maybe we can take a listen to?
Yeah, let's take a listen to that.
Thank you.
too. The Aboriginal youth point of view. Let's go. Stereotypes where they like to hold me. Cause they think I'm just one of the homies. But I'm not. I'm unhealthy is what they told me. But damn, you don't even know me. Stereotypes where they like to hold me. Cause they think I'm just one of the homies. But I'm not. I'm unhealthy is what they told me. But damn, you don't even know me. There's no box on the census big enough to hold me. If you walk in my shoes, only then can you know me. Underestimated because I am a youth. But I am the future and I am the truth. I'm doing great, hey, thanks for asking. That survey was nice, now it's time for some action. Understand today and then plan for tomorrow. And make only good things, avoid all the sorrow. And though not all of our people are wealthy, it seems as though most of the youth say they're healthy. At the same time, 40% are obese. So is it that half don't know or they're just at ease? When it comes to exercise, you know that we probably like swimming, running, or else fastball and hockey. But First Nations youth's favorite sport when you're living on the res is walking back and forth. We're like Little Wayne, cause we're a little wheezy. 12% have asthma, 16 allergies, see? So take it easy, don't go nuts. And it seems like 44% of us are klutz. Overall, 3/4 say they have balance in their bodies by using their physical talents. But we lag with the emotional, mental, and spiritual. I guess we're still out here waiting on a miracle. About 10% of boys and about 20% of girls have thought about...
Okay, I'll stop it there. He's actually rapping a survey. This is like a 10-year-old video, rapping survey results from... I guess, a First Nation youth survey in Manitoba. But yeah, it was a fascinating, you know, election as well. A lot of focus on healthcare. There was also this really bizarre moment where the incumbent premier, Heather, what was her name? Heather. The PCs.
Yeah.
Put out an ad promising not to search for the remains of the missing indigenous women
in the Manitoba landfill.
It's just a bizarre, like I've never heard of somebody promising inaction and cutting ads.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's just, I don't know. I don't know what the thought process there is. Just, you know, trying to shore up some like racist fragment of your base or.
Yeah, at a time when the general sentiment is towards reconciliation and healing of relations between the settlers and the First Nations communities, it's an interesting political strategy.
Yeah,
to say the least.
Yeah, it was quite bizarre, but yeah, good luck to Wab Kinew. And yeah, I think there's a lot of, I think the main focus was not on his rap, though that's, you know, fun to listen to, was actually healthcare and investing in healthcare in the aftermath of COVID.
Yeah.
And let's see if he, you know, makes good on his promises there.
Sure. As, you know, Premier Designate Kinew celebrates his victory, Prime Minister Trudeau's woes continue. Speaker Anthony Rota honored a Ukrainian Second World War veteran who fought for the Nazi 14th Waffen Grenadier Division of the SS.
Yeah, this is really a bizarre, another kind of bizarre story. I think most people have probably seen the clip, even, you know, outside of Canada, it's like really, you know, doing the rounds. You know, we can play it again here, but I think, you know, as you listen to it, you'll just hear the red flags. This was the standing voice, I don't know if I'm pronouncing the name correctly, Yaroslav Hunka, and he was a former Nazi soldier. And it was actually in the audience of the Ukrainian president, Vladimir Zelensky, who is himself part Jewish. And actually, I believe his father fought on the side of the Soviets during World War II. So yeah, let's just listen to this.
And I think, you know, listening to this over again, I just want to highlight as we go through this clip, just as anyone who's like a student of history, specifically World War II, as he kind of reads a statement, you can see in the clip that he himself realizes what's happening. But if you're a student of history, you kind of see the red flags add up as he kind of throws all these descriptors out there.
Yeah, let's see. Maybe we can, let's just try and count and see how many red flags were there.
Let's do it.
We have here in the chamber today Ukrainian Canadian world veteran from the Second World War who fought the Ukrainian independence against the Russians and continues to support the troops today, even at his age of 98. But I'm very proud to say that he is from North Bay and from my riding of Nipissing-Temiskaming. He's a Ukrainian hero, a Canadian hero, and we thank him for all his service. Thank you.
I'm just going to start that from the beginning again.
We have here in the chamber today Ukrainian Canadian world veteran from the Second World War who fought the Ukrainian independence against the Russians and continues to support the troops today, even at his age of 98.
Yeah, it's kind of bizarre. Like, even, you know...
There are three flags that I saw
there. So what are the three flags?
So first one, you know, it's not really a flag until you get to the later part of that statement, but he says he fought for Ukrainian independence, which is something just to keep in mind, because that has very different meanings at very different times, right, in history. And then he goes on to say, against the Russians, which again... It has different contexts based on when in history it took place. And the third, which kind of seals it and actually makes the other two red flags, is the fact that this gentleman is 98, which means the Ukrainian independence movement that he's fighting for against the Russians puts it squarely in World War II. And that's when you begin to question, like, you can see his face. He realizes that, I think he realizes that this might not be, this might be someone that you should probably look into a little bit more.
Yeah, yeah, and the interesting thing, there was, you know, atrocities committed by the Soviet armies, you know, against the Ukrainian people, no doubt. But, you know, there was a subset of, you know, Ukrainian people who actually signed up with the Nazi armies.
Right.
And received training by the Nazis. You know, it's kind of a different, you know, different... story altogether, but yeah.
Well, I mean, there were definitely people. There were Ukrainians who celebrated the arrival of the Nazis because of the atrocities committed by the Soviets in those lands, right? And I think now the issue is more just his whether he volunteered and he joined this division, this Grenadier division, and he did fight for he was trained and he fought for the Nazi Germany war effort.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, you know, I think it's time for a bit of an ad break before we move on to some, I guess, more provincial politics. Or actually, let's cover this first. So, you know, we have an election in BC in a year's time, and I guess. The BC Liberals had the idea that, you know, time to rebrand, right, to jig things around. And they changed their name to BC United. It's not a football club. It's not going to be taking on the Whitecaps in the next
iteration of the league. Yeah, probably not.
It's a political party. And it's had some somewhat interesting results. Do you recall the latest polls, Echo?
Yeah, the latest polls have have the BC NDP. So the BC United, and then now there's the BC Conservative Party of BC. Yeah. So that's the other one. So the current polling has the BC NDP slated to win 71 seats, where in a legislature with a majority, to get a majority, you need 44.
Yeah, so total number of seats is like 80, right?
Yeah.
87 or something. So
it's – actually, I have it here. So it's 71 for the BC NDP, the BC United, 11, the Green Party with 3, and the Conservative Party of BC at 2. Yeah. And the vote projections are also kind of quite lopsided, with the BC United expected to get – BC NDP expected to get about 46%, and then, you know, BC United at 22 and so on.
Yeah.
A landslide.
Yeah, yeah. And I think the core reason for this is basically what you've alluded to, is the resuscitation of the BC Conservatives. And this has actually been led by the expulsion of John Rastad from the BC Liberal Caucus for some remarks he made at that time about carbon dioxide not causing climate change. And now he's emerged as the new leader of the BC Conservatives. And he's
giving them their first seat in Parliament in forever. Yeah.
And now they are official party status. So let's take a look to see how the BC Conservatives have chosen to exercise their newfound maturity as an official party in the Canadian Parliament.
In the BC legislature.
Yeah, BC legislature. I'm sorry, excuse me.
DQ sauced and tossed honey.
Basically, the leader of the Conservative Party of BC, John Rastad, asking the Premier, David Eby, a question about SOGI 123, which is a resource for legislatures, for educators. Apparently, having some trouble pronouncing my words today, but yeah. So SOGI 123 is a resource for educators in BC. Let's take a listen.
Thousands of British Columbians, many of them from minority communities, have been protesting against SOGI 123, which was originally introduced by the BC United Liberals. Parents are concerned about the sexualization of their children in this NDP government's education system. Will the minister admit that SOGI 123 has been divisive, an assault on parents' rights, and a distraction on student education?
Premier.
Well, thank you, Honourable Speaker, and I welcome the member to the House as the leader of his new party. But I got to say, this is not an auspicious start. You know, when you talk about the issues of the day for British Columbians, cost of living, housing, we heard from the BCUP, healthcare, addiction, mental health, to come into this place, to use the authority of his office, his new party, to find a small group of kids in our province, to leverage all of that to make them feel less safe at school, less safe in our community, to feed the fires of division in our province and bring culture war to British Columbia, it is not welcome. And when he sat on this side of the House, he supported those same policies, Honourable Chair. It is outrageous that he would stand here and do this. He sees political advantage in picking on kids and families and teachers and schools who are just trying to do their best for kids who are at risk of suicide, Honourable Chair. Shame on him. Choose another question.
Yeah, so that's Premier David Eby responding to that question. Yeah, I think, you know, Kevin Falcon, who's the leader of BC United, must be really, you know, kicking himself for, you know, kicking out, you know, John Rastad, you know, for saying ridiculous comments. But it's just, he's spun that into a kind of political revival, it seems, of the BC Conservative Party.
Yeah, yeah. And whatever detrimental effect having such a member would have had on their electoral prospects is nothing compared to just what has happened since they booted him from the party, crossed the floor to join the Conservative Party of BC. It doesn't bode well for the Conservative movement in BC at all.
Yeah, yeah.
And he did say, you know, these are irreconcilable differences. But there are there are many races where you've had political parties have to put up with candidates who say ridiculous things that aren't the party line, but you just put up with it because you know that it's in service of your own political expediency, right?
Yeah, I think what's happened is because these kind of social conservatives are seeing that the BC United or BC Liberals or whatever are going to lose anyway. They're like, what's the point if I'm opposition if I can't even say what I want, right? Like, if I can't express my racism, misogyny, or hatred for the LGBTQ community or whatever it might be, you know, if I don't get that opportunity to express, then, you know, what's the point? I'm an opposition anyway. I don't really have the ability to make laws and pass laws. So I think that's where, you know, these people's heads are at. But yeah, it's fascinating to see how it'll play out, I think, in, you know, a year from now. Let me now take that much promised ad break. And we'll be back and we'll cover a bit more of what's going on south of the border as the Republicans are having their own, I guess, civil war. Let's listen to all that after the ad break.
Witness the world's best cinema, meet the creators behind your favorite works, and encounter live shows that combine music and film at the Vancouver International Film Festival. Taking place from September 28th to October 8th, a stellar lineup of over 130 films from 70 countries will transport you to places you've never been. Embrace the magic of cinema with exceptional storytelling that leaves you captivated and inspired. Be in the room as VIFF Live shows breathe life into stories from the screen, combining live performance and cinema. And go behind the scenes with VIFF Talks, connecting you to the brilliant minds behind the work you love. Explore the program and get tickets now at VIFF.org. That's VIFF.org. Student discounts are available, and if you are between the ages of 19 and 25, you can also join VIFF's free U25 membership program.
Are you tired of Big Brother bookstores trying to sell you some billionaire's favorite book or Heather's top picks? Then you should check out Vancouver Books. Vancouver Books is a new online family-run bookstore. A portion of their profits go to First Nations reconciliation and environmental projects in British Columbia. They provide their customers with the most interesting books in fine arts, signed first editions, First Nations photography, fine ancient books, occult, and so much more. They also provide carbon-free delivery to anywhere in the Vancouver area. So go to www.vancouverbooks.ca to check out Vancouver Books today. That's www.vancouverbooks.ca.
Students of UBC, join us. Join the SSN, a collaboration between the C4 Choral Composition Club and the Music Production Club. With us, you can find someone with whom to collaborate, someone with whom to make music. All skill levels welcome. ssn@gmail.com. Reach out. Together, we can make music. Join us.
Do you want to change the state of the world, but instead you keep buying material goods to satisfy whatever desire you have in that very moment? Me too. But now you can do both! Rock Shop and Community Thrift is a local vintage shop that fulfills your 1970s alt-chic fantasy while also supporting at-risk people through their compassionate and supportive work training program. All of their profits go to the PHS Community Services Society to support ongoing healthcare, harm reduction, and health promotion projects in Vancouver and Victoria. So stop by their two locations, Community Unisex on West Hastings or Community Frock Shop on Corral Street. And if you know any other local businesses that deserve recognition for their generous business practices or their contributions to the community, please DM us on Instagram at CITR and Discorder, because we would love to spotlight them. Because hey, if you can't stop buying, you might as well start supporting.
You're listening to the Irmán and Akhil Show on CITR 101.9 FM. The past month has been a busy one south of the border with, you know, the civil fraud trial of Donald Trump in New York, the chaos in Congress, and the ongoing race for the Republican presidential nomination. One of the candidates in the race is Vivek Ramaswamy. He's currently placed third, according to 538.
Yeah, did I mention to you last time that he was Tamil? I may have mentioned it to you, just in passing.
I think you did. But, you know, honestly, when I heard his name for the first time, I was very confident he was Tamil.
I see. And how do you feel about that?
I think his people have different identities. It's
Are you proud?
It's interesting. I mean, it's always interesting to me when people, for instance, when Kamala Harris became vice president, they're like, oh my God, look, it's a South Indian who's become vice president of the U.S. Like, yeah, but it's just, I don't know. It's just, you know, it's another person with another set of political policies. It's really cool to see a person of color. Like, that's definitely a thing, but I'm not sure specifically that it's
Dravidian Tamil. Nationalism, Dravidian supremacy. It's going to take control in the United States. You're going to have AIDMK.
I don't feel comfortable saying that on air. Let's discuss that after the show.
Okay. So, yeah, I'm just going to play a clip. We're going to listen to Vivek Ramaswamy flaunt his Tamil with a supporter.
For you, but I wish you all the best. You know, hopefully,
you.
I see you as a president of the United States.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that. It means a lot.
Yeah, my parents were also from Tamil Nadu.
Oh, were they?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
From Vellore.
Yeah.
நான் அதுக்கு நான் தமிழ் பேசுவேன்
கொஞ்சம்.
Yeah, good. Tamil
தெரியும். கண்டிப்பா தலைவர் ஆகணும்.
More பாலக்காத் தமிழ் though. Good to see you, man.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yes,
thank
sir.
You.
Yeah.
Spread the message and revive that American dream.
So, can you translate for us, Akhil? What was said there?
I couldn't fully hear it because it was mumbled, but he basically just said he knows Tamil too. But the way he said it didn't give me much confidence that he actually does know Tamil.
Oh no!
But you know, he's born and raised in the U.S. He's American.
He's like me. He's like.
Yeah, I don't begrudge him for not knowing Tamil too much.
That's the main problem with Vivek Ramaswamy as a candidate, right? Not the fact that he's wanting to remove birthright citizenship from the U.S.
No, that's fine. That's just a minor constitutional issue. My big problem with him is that he clearly doesn't know how to speak Tamil, and you can't have a president of the U.S. who is Tamilian who doesn't speak Tamil.
No, just generally, that should be a basic requirement that U.S. presidents must speak Tamil.
Yes, I do agree. Yes, yeah. If not for no other reason, just to watch how hilarious it would be to see Donald Trump and Biden try.
But yeah, it's you know, coming back to the, you know, the birth citizenship issue, which we covered last time. What's fascinating to me, I learned about it now, is that his father never became a citizen. His mother became a citizen only after Vivek was born. So Vivek himself was a product of birthright citizenship.
But right. But he draws a distinction, or he's trying to draw a distinction between what he views as birthright citizenship exercised by legal immigrants, and he believes that's protected, and that's how the framers intended for that to be used.
Yeah.
And he's differentiating that from birthright citizenship afforded to children born to illegal immigrants who he doesn't believe those protection or that right extends to them. Which the Constitution says makes no distinction.
Yeah.
All it says is if you're born here, you're a citizen.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is, I think, a lot of people find a very magical thing about, you know, the U.S. Constitution is that, you know, no matter where you came from, you know, if you ended up in America.
Yeah, exactly.
You get the rights of being an American, whatever
exactly.
That entails.
Yeah. And it's a non-starter, right? That's not, I think, as we mentioned last time, it's not something that's... it would require a constitutional amendment, and it's not happening.
Yeah, yeah. But, I thought it's
something that he's trying to make a wedge issue.
Yeah.
And there's just not any momentum behind it.
I thought, you know, when Trump announced that he wants a complete shutdown on Muslims entering the U.S.,
yeah,
I thought that was a non-starter. But he was eventually able to get something, you know. It wasn't a complete Muslim ban, right, but it was a lot of Muslim-majority countries that were right, basically banned from entering the U.S. So let's see what Vivek. We could all be speaking Tamil. It could be the national language of the United States a year from now.
So you're telling me our plan, my community's plan could have worked, is going to work.
Yeah. We were talking about civil war, so we have the primary process where Vivek is duking it out with Ron DeSantis and Chris Christie and a few other.
Yeah, Nikki Haley.
And, of course, Donald Trump. Yeah.
Yeah.
The other civil war is inside the U.S. Parliament,
which is caucus.
In the U.S. House. Could you break it down for our listeners, you know, who is this Matt Gaetz? What's his beef with Kevin McCarthy? And, you know, what's been going on in the last little while?
So in a nutshell, the context for this is Kevin McCarthy became speaker in January after 15 rounds of voting by basically kowtowing to the extreme right element of the Republican Party, which includes Matt Gaetz and Lauren Boebert and other members who kind of have this. How do I put this? They have a so Matt Gaetz is a representative from Florida who has this poison pill kind of mentality of that, you know, if we have to destroy the Democrats and the liberal movement at any cost, if that means shutting down the government, if that means defaulting on the debt, so be it. And they eventually got him to vote for it by they eventually got Matt Gaetz to vote for Kevin McCarthy by basically offering to include a motion to vacate by one member. So basically before you needed, it was a long process you need to, in order to remove a speaker. But now any member can introduce a motion to vacate and a majority can vote to remove the speaker, which is what happened to Kevin McCarthy this past week. That's broadly the context for this. What led to this motion to vacate specifically was Kevin McCarthy's refusal to default on the U.S. debt 3 months ago. And most recently, to fund the government through November. And now we're going to listen to Matt Gaetz talk about how he views that as a submission to the Democrats, a betrayal of the Republican Party ideals.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, one thing to mention, you mentioned, you know, the far right of the Republican Party. One thing, yes, they want to shut down the government, but they also have a whole other package of, you know, very interesting perspectives in terms of, you know, conspiracies, you know, Jewish space lasers controlling the world, you know, COVID vaccines, and just really spectacular set of beliefs that they kind of come bundled with. But yeah, let's listen to Matt Gaetz as he talks with reporters after successfully ousting Kevin McCarthy as speaker, which has never happened before.
Never happened before. And this is
the history of the world's largest democracy.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we heard McCarthy say that he wanted us to bring it on, so I guess we did.
When I spoke with you yesterday, before you introduced the motion, you didn't sound confident that you would have the votes. Now you do. What does that tell you about where your confidence is at?
What it tells me is that you're very poor at reading confidence.
You said you didn't think we were going to succeed.
So you have paralyzed the House of Representatives today. To whose benefit? People have called you a narcissist. People say that it's to your benefit alone. Is it to the benefit of you and to Donald Trump?
It's the benefit of this country that we have a better Speaker of the House than Kevin McCarthy. Kevin McCarthy couldn't keep his word. He made an agreement in January regarding the way Washington would work, and he violated that agreement. We are $33 trillion in debt. We are facing $2.2 trillion annual deficits. We face a de-dollarization globally that will crush Americans, working class Americans. Kevin McCarthy is a feature of the swamp. He has risen to power by collecting special interest money and redistributing that money in exchange for favors. We are breaking the fever now, and we should elect a speaker who's better.
I think we listened to enough from our friend Gaetz. I loved the bluntness of the I think must be BBC or British questioner. But you know, what did you make of that clip?
I think his signature, like Matt Gaetz, the bluster and the kind of almost belligerence and antagonism towards the press. But I mean, that's just the attitude the guy has, right? If you look at the speeches that he makes in the House floor, he's very loud. He has a lot of confidence in whatever he says, even if they're complete, if they're completely out there, if they're just not founded in reality at all. But that confidence is what allows him to do everything that he does.
Yeah, it's also, you know, very interesting. Like each moment in that clip, if we break it down, like the first moment in that clip, he said, Kevin McCarthy told me to bring it on, and I brought it on. And then immediately afterwards, he complains about a reporter coming too close to him.
Yeah.
It's just the juxtaposition is amazing. And then after that, a reporter says, you weren't that confident that you could oust him yesterday, and now you were able to oust him. And he turns around and tells the reporter, well, that means you're not good at reading confidence, confidence, rather than actually answering the question something he himself said.
Yeah.
And then the third thing is, he calls Kevin McCarthy a creature of the swamp. Matt Gaetz, his actual name is Matt Louis Gaetz II. He is a third generation politician. Kevin McCarthy, I don't believe, has any generation of politician at all. He both or neither might be creature of the swamp. I don't know what that means. But I just think, like each of those sentences he makes, when you unpack them, you just realize, it's quite, there's almost like a satire. It's almost like we're watching like a satire of politics, politics.
It's very Trumpian, right? And I think that's probably a term that Trump introduced, the creature of the swamp. The House is very chaotic. There's no speaker.
Yeah, it's one thing though, Trump, to say, hey, I'm an outsider businessman who, this is this evil swamp in D.C. It's another thing to say, I'm a third generation politician. My name is literally Matt Gaetz II.
Right.
And I'm calling people creatures of the swamp.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how creatures of the swamp are meant to be born, but they
definitely don't have a second iteration. there's no juniors and seniors involved.
Matt Gaetz is definitely... in any case,
this whole fiasco has been very interesting, right? I mean, look, he's clearly very hypocritical in saying that. But I don't know. We'll see. There's now Jim Jordan and Steve Scalise vying for the speaker's post, Trump did endorse Jim Jordan.
I didn't hear about that. That's going to be really exciting.
Absolutely. I mean, for a very brief period, Trump was himself touted as a possible candidate for speakers. You don't have to be a member.
Yeah.
But
that's interesting. Yeah. And Jim Jordan, he was the, Hillary Clinton emails guy, right?
He's currently the Hunter Biden laptop guy.
Okay.
Hunter Biden Ukraine guy. There were so many of them that were Hillary Clinton email guys back in the day.
I thought he was the OG, but...
No, I think right now he's leaving. I'm not sure about that, but he's leading the charge now.
Experience. He has experience with the Hillary Clinton email story, and now he's leveraging that, It's like in our work experience, you work, on one project.
Yeah.
And...
You make a bunch of stuff up about one project, and then, in the next project, you already know how to make things up very effectively.
Exactly. Yeah. That's going to be, interesting to see. The other thing that struck me, I listened to Kevin McCarthy's entire speech with reporters after he left, a press conference, and his relationship with reporters, at least on display in that period, was so different than Matt Gaetz's. I don't think he answered questions or stuff like that, but there was a certain playfulness and kind of treating reporters as if they're all with him together as part of one club.
Like kind of like a collegial attitude.
Yeah, like they're colleagues, right? They might be rivals, but they're colleagues, right? And it was very, very different dynamic. It was kind of fascinating to watch. You know, you brought up Matt Gaetz's belligerence to reporters, and there's a huge contrast. People do want to check out Kevin McCarthy's last words as speaker.
I think in that press conference, he just also seems almost relieved that this happened in a weird way. That's kind of the feeling I got when you, like you said, right? He just was very almost jovial, just and just like he almost seemed just relaxed.
Yeah, yeah, and he was trading in some gossip about, you know, aide saying one thing and. Right. You know, some office gossip. It was kind of amusing to watch. But yeah, he's gone. We'll be talking about maybe Jim George's suit, which would be really, I don't know, what lows the Republican Party would have taken the House if they elected Jim Jordan. But
and you know, whoever becomes the speaker, the funding fight, especially if Jim Jordan becomes the speaker, the funding fight in November is going to be. Very interesting to watch.
Yeah, so we're facing another government shutdown, most likely in a month or two. So that was Kevin McCarthy's legacy. He delayed a government shutdown by 1.5 months and put himself on the sword for that.
And ended his tenure as the third shortest tenure for a speaker in history.
Yeah, fantastic. So if you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Armaan and Akil Show on CITR 101.9 FM. After the break, we're going to listen to some international news across the pond, as well as the latest in crypto drama as we kind of wrap things up. But first, some wonderful ads.
Every Friday at noon, CITR takes you on a journey through Thunderbird Radio Land. A journey of sound and song, of words and music, of the now and then, of the right here and the far away. It's the Eclectic Lunch, every Friday at 12 noon on Thunderbird Radio, 101.9 FM in beautiful Vancouver.
Known pimp, narcotics king, big time racketeer, back in full force.
This could be one of the big moments in your life. Don't make it your last.
Look, this thing might be bigger than even we think it is.
Do you need an upgrade to the soundtrack to your life? Perhaps a song from a film or a tune from TV? My name is Gap. Exploding Head Movies is here to give you sounds from the cinema, along with the songs that will be defining your future. Those forgotten classics that need a little rescue.
Yeah. Come on, baby. Come on. I won't let you down. Follow me.
Exploding Head Movies, Monday, 7 to 9 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
Join Coquitlam Public Library for this year's speaker series, Conversations on Race, a five-part series running every Wednesday from October 11th to November 8th. Conversations on Race will highlight the lived experiences of people who have faced Islamophobia and anti-Semitism, as well as highlight the immigrant experience and Indigenous cultures in Canada, culminating in a workshop on allyship that will leave attendees with tools for how to speak on and tackle issues of diversity, equity, and inclusion in their daily lives. To find out more, visit Coke Library, that's coquelibrary.ca.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Armaan and Akil Show on CITR 101.9 FM. We are going through some weird and wonderful clips from last month's news. So Armaan, what do we have up next?
So yeah, the Tories in the UK are not doing super well. They're like trailing in the polls. Not as bad as the BC United, but verging on that territory. So you know, they have these conferences and they're kind of redirecting, reprojecting power to kind of recapture the imagination of the British public. And here we have a clip by, I believe she's cabinet minister. And I just want, you know, folks to listen to the way the journalist interacts with the politician. It's so different in the UK, and it's I find it very refreshing.
Absolutely.
Take a listen.
You said in your speech today, you said something that really struck me. You said, "We are the party." I wonder if I could ask you to just have a little look at this, please.
A government diktat to sort your rubbish into seven different bins.
What is sinister and what we shouldn't tolerate is the idea that local councils can decide how often you go to the shops.
It's no wonder that Labour seems so relaxed about taxing meat.
How can you be the party of facts when none of that is true?
We are the party that stands up for facts. And my announcement today...
I'm going to pause you right there. None of those three things are true.
Well, it certainly is true. There are a lot of people that have been calling for a meat taxation. And it's this government that have been stemming that.
I'm not going to let this go. There was never a proposal to use seven bins. We can't find any council that wants to decide how often people can go to shops. And Labour have never proposed taxing meat. They are untruths. They are fiction. They are completely and utterly made up. And it's really disrespectful to voters.
We are, I genuinely believe, we are the party of facts and evidence.
I've just given you three pieces of fiction that members of your party have said in the last couple of weeks.
Well, I've heard members of the Labour Party advocating for those things. And
it was never a Labour policy. Come on.
That wasn't the words that were used there. And I have heard members of the Labour Party advocating for those things and advocating for their party to campaign on those areas.
Is this how desperate the Conservative Party is now? You're making up stuff.
I'm sure.
Yeah. So, yeah, I was just, especially the interaction. But yeah, what did you make of that, Akel?
Well, as you said, that kind of journalism and that kind of questioning, that line of questioning is very refreshing. The MP tries to pivot away and kind of go into like an answer that's just kind of sidestepping the questions, and the journalist doesn't let it go. She keeps coming back to the central point that those are untruths, right? That those three statements are just not true. There's nothing. There's not a grain of truth to them, and she doesn't let it go. That's very different than Canadian and American news.
Yeah, yeah. And for our listeners, the guest was Michelle Donnellan, Secretary of State for Science, Innovation and Technology at the United Kingdom. And I found one word that you pointed out to me before the show. She said, "I believe these to be true," or something like that.
She said, "I believe we're the party of facts."
Which is, you know, it's kind of a very bizarre choice of phrase. Like, belief, it's become like almost like a spiritual brand that right. you've adopted.
And almost like an individual right. Right? Which, yes, you're welcome to believe whatever you want, but it's not an individual right for that to be the reality, right? That to be our shared reality.
Yeah,
And that's basically what she's saying. She's saying, you know, the journalist pushes back. She says, "That's not true." And she goes, "And you know, like, how can you call yourself the party of facts?" And the response is, "I strongly believe we're the party of facts." Like, but that's not the point being litigated. Your belief isn't being litigated here. You can believe whatever the hell you want. But the three pieces of information that you provided, untrue.
Yeah. Another thing, you know, she said members of the Labour Party have supported this. You know, party members can support anything under the sun. I bet you'll find some Conservative Party member who says diddly whatever.
Yeah.
Right? It's to be campaigning and, you know, making speeches based on what a member of a party has said.
Right.
For, you know, elected politicians, for the incumbent government.
Yes.
To be campaigning against members.
Yeah.
It's just bizarre.
Well, and, you know, it's just to think about how it sounds, you know, you know, if you're thinking about it, you go, well, what do you mean they told you? Was this an official meeting, like a conversation? Were you getting drinks? Like, what does that mean when someone told you, and therefore it's the Labour Party's platform,
yeah,
right?
Just for our listeners, when you say you're a member of a political party, this is like the you know, millions of people who vote for the leader of their party. They're not elected anywhere. They have no standing over anything. Like, all they get to do basically is they vote for, if you're a card-carding member of a party, right, in most democracies, you can vote for who becomes leader of that party.
Absolutely.
And a few other things beyond that. But you don't have any significant control over,
right,
the actual policy positions of the party beyond choosing a leader. So you have one, it's like, you know, you can find one Bernie Sanders supporters or one, you know, Donald Trump or one Ron DeSantis supporters who says anything. It's not really the views of that candidate. You know, speaking of Steve Scalise, there was a Bernie Sanders supporter who
shot him.
Who shot him, right? Yeah. It doesn't mean Bernie Sanders
believes... advocates for political violence,
yeah,
right?
Right, exactly. Yeah.
But so, that type of journalism is exactly what we need, what I think any democracy should have, right? Where you don't... I think the immediate instinct isn't to believe whatever's being said. It's to take a very skeptical approach to everything being said by any politician.
Yeah.
And asking questions, which is what journalists are expected to do.
Right. We're almost out of time. I think to wrap this up really quickly, let's listen. So everybody knows SBF, Sam Bankman-Fried. He was the crypto czar of FTX, the world's largest or second largest crypto exchange at one point in time. It collapsed. He got arrested. He's currently on trial for fraud. And I had a clip of Martin Shkreli, who was known as Farmer Bro, who himself just recently came out of prison for defrauding his investors. He was famous for artificially kind of jacking up the price of critical
Daraprim, yes,
medication. Yeah. Like thousands of percent.
Yeah, for something like, it was like $13 or something, and he jacked it up to well over $800.
Yeah, just, you know, for his business to earn more profit, and he kind of made a business out of that. Anyway, he's got some advice for SBF.
Like Fort Dix, where we were at, where every single person has a cell phone, it literally is like, you can Google me. It's three. Oh, I would use this line. It's three letters. SBF, bitch. Just Google it. Isn't that a fire line, Poops? Three letters. SBF. Put that in your phone and I would flex real quick.
Yeah, real quick, man. Three letters, man. You don't have to do too much. You don't have to look too far.
And I do think people would kind of think that was cool and be like, oh, you're the biggest scammer of all time. That's awesome. Again, they're grimy people, but they'll want to hear the stories, and he'll hold court and be like, yeah, well, you know, the one time I had a, you know, and he'll describe some crazy scenario from his life. And I think people will be entertained by that. So if he does the low system, I think he'll be fine. You know, he'll actually maybe even kind of find a way to acclimate. But I just think at the time he's facing, the time he's likely to get, I just don't think he's going to have that walk in the park that Poops, Default, and I had, that, you know, is arguably, looking back on it, was a walk in the park.
Yeah, so it's Martin Shkreli giving advice. I think it's just bizarre. We're at this time where, you know, one fraudster is giving another fraudster advice how to, you know, survive in prison. And
right,
it's actually describing his time in prison as a walk in the park and how to navigate that.
And he says something similar to, you know, the disgraced former guy who ran Terra, Do Kwon as well. He said, don't worry, prison's not that bad.
So,
living interesting times.
Yeah, it's quite fascinating. Anyway, do you want to wrap things up, Akil?
Absolutely. That brings us to the end of today's show. A few other things to wrap up. You can find us at The Arman Akil on Instagram and Twitter, so do check us out there.
Yeah, and we do have, you know, awesome shows with more guests lined up for you in the future. Do continue to listen and subscribe. You can find all of our episodes on our podcast feed. Shout out again to Sarah Pratt. She was on the show last time, and she makes all the music for our show. handmade music. It's one of a kind.
You can find her at the handle Leisure Noise on SoundCloud.
Yeah, and we'll end things off with Song of the Mice.